Cinema Classics is brought to you by the Gateway Film Center at the South Campus Gateway, 1550 North High Street. Further details and showtimes online at gatewayfilmcenter.com.
Cinema Classics is produced by John DeSando and Johnny DiLoretto. Listen to the shows online at wcbe.org. I'm John DeSando.
I'm Johnny DiLoretto. This is Cinema Classics, and we are at the Gateway Film Center, where everyone is super excited, John, as we all are wont to get when a new Coen Brothers movie is in the pipeline.
And everybody has to see it who cares anything about movies. It's called Inside Llewyn Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to make them any money.
Of course. Few of their films do.
I think No Country for Old
Men. But many of their films, out of a filmography of, 20 films now, how many commercial hits have they had? I'd say Fargo, No Country for Old Men, and True Grit.
How about Big Lebowski?
Big Lebowski was a tanked when it came out.
I know, but I mean it's...
But over the years, it's accrued that cult status, so you may be right at this point. It may finally have turned a profit, but I'm not sure.
Well, this Llewyn Davis, the newest one, is a dark demythologizing. This Llewyn Davis is a dark demythologizing of the 60s folk rock, 3, 2, 1, of the 60s rock scene. Listen to me. Llewyn Davis is a demythologizing of the folk scene of the early 60s.
Okay.
And by what I meant that this is going to be a difficult sell for them,
right,
is that it's a dark side of that. In other words, it's not the happy Peter, Paul, and Mary side.
Well, in typical Coen Brothers fashion, their protagonist is not exactly likable.
No.
Right. He's an annoying kind of, nothing goes right for him, and part of that is his own doing.
Oh, yeah. So he's... So I thought that while it interested me, and I like folk music, still do, and I liked his, I don't require an uplifting film.
Mm-hmm.
I just think for people who are going to a film to hope, in the spirit of the folk music, to have some kind of a rebellious, good story, it's not going to happen.
Well, let me ask you this. The Coen Brothers, when they first launched upon the scene in the late 80s with Raising Arizona, Blood Simple, and then segued just phenomenally into the 90s with Miller's Crossing and Barton Fink and Fargo, these guys were in command of the writing craft. Yeah. They wrote original screenplays. As they've gotten older, they've dabbled, with different degrees of success with previously written material, adapted material.
Okay.
No Country for Old Men, obviously, was a Cormac McCarthy book. Probably the best adaptation of anything Cormac McCarthy has written. And they nailed it. This one, also True Grit. They stayed really true to the original novel, and they cranked out a really nice Western in the classic style.
Sure, yeah.
What about this one? Inside Llewyn Davis is a 2013 American comedy drama film written, directed, and edited by the Coens. The film stars Oscar Isaac. It's produced by Scott Rudin, Ethan and Joel. It tells the story of a singer-songwriter who navigates New York's Film One Grand Prix production, set in 1961, was inspired by the cultural disconnection within a New York-based music scene where the songs seem to come from all parts of the U.S. except New York, but whose performers included Brooklyn-born, blah, blah, blah. One source for the film was Van Ronk's posthumously published memoir, The Mayor of McDougal Street.
Oh, yeah.
According to the book's co-author, Elijah Wald, the Coens mined the work for local color in a few scenes. I thought this guy was real. Why don't I?
Yeah. Anyway, we don't have to make that point. I didn't.
Oh, okay. I just want to make sure that we didn't. So it was based on...
Well, Van Ronk, is of course a big folk singer of the time, and a lot of...
Oh, was he?
Yeah. He I forget what his first name is, but he's got a gravelly voice. It'd be like Tommy Lee Jones if he could sing.
Okay.
But he was a godfather of most of the scene, so that's where they got their material, which would be not the well-known, but the kind of underside
All right. So let's just say this. And this this film, their latest film, loosely adapted from a book called The Mayor of McDougal Street.
Got it, yeah.
Do you know about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I know of the singer Van Ronk, who was really the godfather of most of the folk singers at that time. People would visit him in the village, and he would be found singing now and then anywhere he wanted to go.
Right.
Great gravelly voice. So I can understand where he would have had the stories that the Coens would have been able to mine.
So why mine this period? What are they after? What are they getting after?
It's a good question, man. But you made the point that I think is really important, that their protagonists usually are unlikable losers. And they're sometimes on a quest that's going to lead them into very bad business. In this case, you got a guy who's very much alone, who you would hope he doesn't sing bad. He just doesn't have whatever that spark is that moves you to the next level. So he continues to stroll around everywhere, including New York, trying to find work and just to stay alive.
See, I think this is the mark of their best works, where they take a character, usually a man, who is driven in some way or possesses some skill that he may or may not have, may or may not be in control of, and then is just ineffectual.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a series of trials and tribulations that this character goes through. He's a loser, usually, as you put it. And they're really the only, you know, contemporary filmmakers working in that vein, mining the poetry of the American loser.
All right.
And the loser, ultimately, in their films, the most rewarding ones, reaches some kind of understanding of himself, or even experiences just a blip or a modicum of the success that they're after.
Well, according to your paradigm, the best is maybe the earliest, one of the earliest, which would be Nicolas Cage in Raising Arizona.
Yes, what a beautiful loser that guy is.
Yes, exactly. Then if you take Josh Brolin in No Country for Old Men, there's a more serious side to that. You're talking about found money, you're talking about murder, you're talking about... They have some of the greatest villains of all time.
Yeah, well, see, that's different because Josh Brolin, well, he doesn't experience anything good in that movie.
Yeah.
He doesn't come out of the other side. But I'm thinking of, like, Barton Fink, you know, or John Turturro is the, you know, the Clifford Odets screenwriting figure.
Writer on fire.
He wants to create art, and yet he's incapable of doing it in that, at least in that that scenario, and he comes out of the other side having grown to some degree.
What about Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
You know, a lot of people love that movie, and I'm not necessarily as big a fan as some people around here are, even.
And I think some people have hoped that I think that some people had hoped Llewyn Davis would have some of that Oh Brother, because of the music, have some of the Oh Brother cachet to it, and it's completely opposite. It's not it at all.
Is that right?
Yeah, but that's when I first saw what the Coens could do with an actor like George Clooney.
Yeah.
Because initially I was put off by his kind of ersatz Gable routine.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got into it, and I understood what they were doing, and I thought it was really funky, and you had three very whacked out guys in a kind of humorous odyssey. And also because I think in this film, Llewyn Davis, you have a cat named Ulysses.
Okay.
So they're making...
And I'm assuming you mean a real cat. You're not like talking in 60s parlance like a hep cat.
You know, that was pretty good. Right? For a young guy, you got it down.
Okay, there's a cat named Ulysses.
And so I think they're and this is kind of an odyssey in Llewyn Davis.
Okay.
So they're trying to make their own connection to their own films.
Right.
And that's probably why people were hoping for that.
There's another interesting thing that the Coens do, and you having seen the film, I'm going to ask you about it. They often vacillate between using big-name movie stars to really great, you know, success, and then guys who you just never heard of, guys that almost... exacerbate the character's annoying qualities.
Yeah, you're right.
Now, this guy is Oscar Isaac in the lead role.
Yeah.
How does he fare?
He's just fine because you throw in Justin Timberlake, mm-hmm. and you think you have your big star, although Timberlake's really a cameo, an elaborate cameo, as he does a song with Llewyn Davis.
Okay.
I think he fits in perfectly with that loser, dark, underside world. I think it works perfectly. It's just not an exciting story. It's not in any way a story that leaves you to think you understand the folk scene better, other than I do understand how difficult it is for any human being at any time to make it in the arts.
Right.
They do a terrific job showing you if you want to do it, you are going to have to work hard and you are going to face disappointment. So they have that down, regardless of whether it's the rock scene of the 60s or not.
Mm.
But yeah, your point is, I think he's well cast.
Okay.
I think they would have made a mistake to cast somebody we really knew.
That's interesting. Yeah. It's funny to me how they go back and forth this way. You know, No Country for Old Men was such a great noir movie and gave Tommy Lee Jones such a great role and Javier Bardem and even Josh Brolin, arguably this talent who has been just kind of very nearly frittering away on the periphery of stardom, and it was the best thing that he'd ever done.
Yes.
And then they follow that up with a movie called A Serious Man. You remember that?
Oh, really?
And yeah, right. It was just this, again, I think it was the 60s, this exploration of a loser. But this guy was played by Michael Stolberg.
And right,
He's more of a stage actor.
I remember him so well.
Yeah, right. Michael Stolberg. Trust me, it took me 20 minutes to find him. And the movie, I get what they're doing. You know, they want to explore the banality of suburban 60s, 70s life. And a man who, you know, he's experiencing a sort of Jewish crisis of faith. And the guy was just a vacuum of personality. And it, I mean, I know they have to be smart enough to know that that's what they're doing. But in that movie, it just didn't work.
Yeah.
So I wonder if this was more, I wonder if we're going to get more of the same here with Oscar Isaac.
I don't know. If you look at their filmography, they are kind of vacillating always between great and not great.
Yeah.
And they're two guys who can make movies at will. Everybody knows them. They're iconic. They're like, who do we say that they're like Pulp Fiction?
Oh, Tarantino?
They're like Quentin Tarantino. You say the name, you're in the movie.
Yeah.
You're going. You're right there. You're going to see it.
I think that they, for me, as someone who was such a huge fan of theirs, I was excited about the Coen brothers in the early 90s as much as I've been excited about Scorsese films, you know, of the 70s and 80s. But to me, they seem to have lost their voice along the way. It's almost like they became aware of they started hearing their voice and trying to duplicate it as opposed to just writing it, you know.
Well, I always found
letting
it
happen.
I think Ethan Coen had stated they don't understand. They never meant to be satirical. He said, you know, we never meant to have double meanings. We never meant to have it other than these are the stories that we tell.
Right. And you know, it's very similar to Scorsese's filmmaking in one key regard. Scorsese devoured the cinema of the 40s and the 50s.
Right, yeah.
So when he finally, and to a really intense degree, so when he finally started making films in the late 60s and 70s, he was investing his films with this really passionate movie nerd. He was really making movies coming out of that passionate movie nerd lens. And they, you know, all his films, you know, they were tied back to some classic Hollywood film in some way, stylistically or in the color scheme. And the Coen brothers, I felt, were the same way. They were regurgitating the cinema of the 70s in that same way, very intensely, as, you know, as students who devoured it.
Oh, sure.
And when it came out, when it came out of their lenses, it was this really big, intensified version of that.
And they, in fact, are probably devouring their own filmography at this point.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's what I'm saying. You lose something. It's kind of like Scorsese today. His movies are shallow, hollow versions of what a Scorsese movie used to be.
It's a tough business.